Welcome to season 6 of the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out we were a neurodiverse couple until our 29th year of marriage. And I've been divorced since 2018, but together we have an amazing adult daughter who's thriving and doing fantastic. I am so excited to be starting season 6 after over 150 episodes of the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I have had the opportunity to meet so many amazing couples, individuals, therapists, and coaches and experts throughout the world. But today I have the opportunity to talk to one of my dearest friends who was my co-host for season 1. I have to say that I am so excited to share that I'm starting season 6 with one of my dearest friends who, if it wasn't for her, I never would have started this podcast. So, Olga, welcome back.
Hi, I'm back. I'm so excited. It's been so long, and I have missed our conversations before the podcast and then making it. So the introduction will go something like, I was in a relationship for almost a year with someone that was on the spectrum or is on the spectrum, and everything started then, and here we are 6 seasons later. This is so exciting. I celebrate you in every single season. It's been an amazing journey. So I feel very honored to be here today.
Awesome. And I am so honored to have you back on the podcast. And Olga and I, we've said this before, we definitely have a type. It is intelligent men who have a passion for something that means a lot to them. And we continue to be dating or in relationships with autistic and neurodivergent men. And since we started the podcast 3 years ago, we've both learned so much, right?
True.
And today we want to talk about a bunch of different things, but we want to start by talking about the importance of 3 things: respect, compassion, and love. And Olga, do you want to start with the respect piece?
Yes. So lately, since we started our journey, one of the biggest things I have learned and I have been practicing, because I get excited about every day of life, I get to practice what I've learned, and it has become like a thing in my life. So respect is one of those things. And I think I learned that with the person I was in that relationship, and through the process of kind of learning what I needed to learn from that and doing the podcast and all of that. And the main lesson for me was how important it was to respect him. And then from there, everybody else in my line of work, I encounter a lot of trauma. I am a lactation consultant and a doula. And so I go through trauma with birthing people, and I identify how, you know, challenging that space is for people and families that are expecting babies. And then with the breastfeeding journey also, in the relationships with all the people that I have encountered in my life that I think are in the spectrum, or they have been diagnosed. Some of them have been, and some of them, I just think they are because of the very common traits. But going through life with that sense of, oh, I need to feel, first of all, honored to be in the life of that person, that person is opening a space for me to be in his or her life. To me, that became so important. And that has given me the sense of need for respect of that life. So respecting the other person to me means opening the space for the person to be whoever he or she is or they are, and then being okay with them expressing who they are, and without judging, without like treating them well. And opening the space means a lot of things. Means they can be whoever they are, and they also receive love and compassion in that place of respect. So I have no reason to judge them, and I have no ground to judge them because I have not walked one day in their shoes. So that's why I feel like I'm, first of all, I'm honored to be in the presence of the person. And then I need to respect where they're coming from and their story, their journey. And then from there, we can build anything. So it becomes magical. Mm. It's challenging though. It has big challenges, because then if there are things I don't agree with, or they're hurt, or that are uncomfortable, then I'm going to go like, this is a little uncomfortable. But then challenging myself to, okay, I'm going to be okay here. I can still provide that respect, because if I do that, then I can feel more compassion and I can be a lot more loving when I am in that relationship. They don't owe me anything. All they have to do in life is to live, to exist. And that's all. So that's my start point.
I love it. I love it. And I think one of the things that I've learned since we started the podcast is that I lost respect for my ex-husband, and I lost respect for him because I do think that he was masking throughout our relationship. And I think he did a lot of things to please me because he was afraid of conflict. I think that he wasn't his authentic self. And I hope, you know, we haven't talked in several years. I hope that he's living his best and most authentic life, because I absolutely am. But I think when you do lose respect for your partner, it can become a very downhill slide, and it can happen very, very quickly. But I also think it's really important to have respect for yourself. And I think a lot of the couples that I've gotten to know lose respect for their partner, and they lose respect for themselves because they don't truly understand what they need in their relationship and in their life. And so they don't have compassion for each other, and they don't have compassion for themselves. And they've forgotten who they really are, or they may have never known who they really are.
Yeah, that's so true. It's so true. And it's so painful to not to have that self-respect and then not being able to give it. And I think I am in a place after my own journey that I gained a lot of respect for myself. Mm-hmm. And now I don't fall into the trap of somebody's criticizing me or telling me how much I'm a crazy woman, or I am wrong because I did this or made this decision. I respect myself in a way that I know where I'm coming from, why I made the decisions I made, and do not fall for the temptation of judging myself and treating myself poorly. So because I am doing that, I am able to see the other person and open that space to respect them more than I don't know what their journey has to be to build themselves as the person they want to be. But who am I to come into that journey and say, oh, because you're this and you're that and you're that, or you should be doing this, or things like that. Like, I have to respect their journey. And so all I have to do, if I feel like it's it's against my principles, or it's hurting me, or something, I need to step back and or step away. Like, I have to leave the relationship with that person so that they can leave their journey freely, and I am not going to be in their way so that I get hurt in the way.
I think that's a really hard thing for a lot of partners and even couples who still love each other but don't like each other. And definitely
and how
don't
do you do that
each
together?
Other.
How do you do that when you're still together?
Right.
And I think there could be a way to do it, still being together and do it.
I always say I wish I had a magic wand. I do not have a magic wand that can solve all the challenges that neurodiverse couples experience. But what I do know is that when you are your authentic self and your partner does not respect who you are and cannot see you through a lens of compassion and love, that it's data for you to kind of analyze and say, is this really the right relationship for me if I can't be my authentic self and be loved and respected and treated with compassion by my partner? I know that that was the case in my marriage. I think we stopped respecting each other. We stopped treating each other with compassion. I think we still loved each other for sure. That never went away. But the other two things did go away. The other thing I think is trust. And I stopped trusting my ex-husband. And I think I even stopped trusting myself. I made decisions that weren't healthy for me. And I think I lost respect for myself, and I lost myself. And you and I have talked about this before, and you've watched me on this journey, you know, become the best Mona possible, the most authentic Mona possible at 59. But it was a hell of a journey, Olga.
I know. I've seen it. I've had the honor of being a witness to that process and my own process. Like, I don't think anybody is exempt from having to learn the hard way, because the only way we learn is the hard way. We have to experience it. We have to process it. We have to go through it. And that's the sad part of it. Like, when you are so aware of yourself and you want to protect yourself and you want to continue your journey, you may love a lot of that person, but then you have to make the decision of, this is not the place for me right now, because it will harm me.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. So I have to walk away with a lot of pain, a lot of love. But I think that also is very powerful, because my experience with that relationship that I had several years ago is that now that we're friends, because we were respectful of each other's path and journey, now it's okay. It's okay to look back and think, oh my God, I didn't understand this then, but I understand it now. And I don't even know how I wasn't aware of this. Like, now it's so clear to me. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like we could go back to, you know, 5 years ago, 7 years, 5 years ago, and make it work again. But no, that's just in your head. Like, that's just my thinking, but it's really not realistic, because we are who we are now, and you know, it's a different path for each one of us. But going through it with such a respect and such compassion has made a big difference. So that has taught me a lot about how important it is. And I have experienced another relationship where that respect and that compassion has made a huge difference on how that relationship started and how it has gone through a lot of processes, individual processes for each one of us. And it's amazing. It feels great. And it makes you a lot more humble because of the immensity of the other's life and journey. And so it increases that ability to feel that compassion and that respect for the other person.
Yeah. And I think, Olga, what you're talking about is that you were able to create a safe space in that relationship that you're in, and you've been in for about 3 years. And I think there's so many neurodiverse couples and couples in general who do not create an emotionally safe space. I'm not talking about physical abuse. I'm talking about feeling that you can be your authentic self, that you can share your fears and you can share your concerns with your partner, and they're going to treat you with respect. They're going to have compassion for whatever you're feeling, whatever you're thinking, whatever you're experiencing. You're not going to be judged. And I just want to say to the listeners, this shit is hard.
It is.
It brings up all your trauma and your childhood wounds and things that
in every relationship you've been in, and what has been traumatic in that relationship, because it takes you back to that place where you're not safe. So it brings back all the memories of those unsafe places.
Right.
So then you have to go back and heal those places, heal those relationships in your heart, so that you're able to move on and have a better relationship. And I've seen the picture of people in the spectrum, and I was talking to you about this friend of mine that is, I can see now, like I didn't see it before, but now I'm going back and saying, you know what? I think he lived a life of masking and not having a safe place anywhere. And he tried so hard his entire life that now he has given up. And now he is not making music. He's not doing what he loves. He only has one relationship that he values, and it's the relationship with his daughter. But then everything else just lost so much value, that he is in his little room, because he's renting a room somewhere in a city where he is not working, and he is using drugs. And it's just so sad to see that people sometimes don't find that safe place to be themselves, mm-hmm. and to feel like, okay, I'm accepted the way I am, and I have a space to grow the way I need to grow. Mm-hmm. It's sad. It's very sad to see that someone feels that way and has given up.
Yeah. And there's so many, Olga, there's so many folks that we know that will never be diagnosed. The person you're talking about is about my age. I'm 59. Yeah. And there's so many folks that will never self-identify as autistic or neurodivergent. And they'll struggle in some areas of their life. Maybe they're succeeding in their career, but they've been divorced several times, or in, you know, relationship after relationship, may not have a relationship with their children or the rest of their family. And so I think it's really important for the listeners to hear that there's no shame and there's no need for guilt in being your authentic self. And I think it's really important to find that safe space where you can be your authentic self. And maybe it's in an online community to start with. And maybe you find people or a person that wants to be in a relationship with you, whether it's a friendship or a romantic relationship, who understands how your brain works. And that goes for both the neurotypical or holistic or the autistic person, because we all deserve to live our most authentic lives and not to feel shame or guilt for who we are. And Olga and I were talking about how, you know, some people might think we're too much, Olga and I. We don't think each other's too much, but too much in the emotional sense. And we know we've been with partners where our emotions did not make them comfortable, you know, and processing things did not make them comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. And so why should anybody have to make themselves smaller and dim their light so they can be in a relationship with another person who doesn't make them feel safe? I'm not for that.
No, nobody should be for that, because you can't live like that for a long time. And if you do, then it's like you're dying inside. Mm-hmm. And then by the time you realize you're dying inside, you have to do so much to come out of that and
I think people
like coming out of that. That hole is like a hole.
Yeah, it
just
it's like
sucks you
hole.
In.
Yeah.
And then coming out, you have to make even bigger efforts and sometimes hurt people in the way out, because it's like, oh my God, I can't live like this anymore. So the more you do to feel comfortable being yourself, I think in my case, going in and saying, okay, so I am who I am. I can change, you know, things, and I can do process, and I can do therapy, but I should not do those things and feel like doing something is what's giving me the space to exist. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm breathing, that gives me the space to exist. And then after that, everything else is a plus. And then I'm trying to do the best I can so I can live the best life I can, and enjoy it and have fun and feel like I have my space. I'm taking my space, and I'm also allowing everybody around me to have their own space so we all can have fun.
Yeah.
So when you realize that and when you heal, it sounds very simple, but it's not that simple. But it is great to feel like now I'm 50 and I understand all these things, and maybe, you know, every day from now on, it can be lived differently and enjoyed even more than before, because I love life and dancing and a lot of things.
and I think, Olga, what's so interesting and exciting is that because we accept ourselves for who we are, we respect ourselves, we're compassionate and loving towards ourselves, we can be that way towards others. And I have told you repeatedly that I've reached out to my ex-husband with kindness and compassion and respect for him. He does not want to talk to me at this point in my life, and that's fine with him. But because he is the father of our child, I will always have a place for him in my life. And I value all the time that we've had together. I'm not sure that a lot of the neurodiverse couples who end their relationships can say the same thing, but that's their choice. I've gone through the healing that I needed to go through to get to a place where I can accept what was and be joyful for what is and what's to come in my future. And I also think that the more you can value who you are and accept who you are, the better your life's going to be. And if you're with a partner who cannot be there with you, then you really have to look at whether that's the right partner for you.
Yeah, I think what makes the biggest difference is that if you're in the process of being more comfortable being yourself and being compassionate to yourself and respecting yourself, if the other person is not doing that, the difference is so big that it's going to make you too incompatible. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to make the relationship very difficult to be successful. So I think that's the biggest difference. Mm-hmm. It's not so much about everything else in life, like your job or your mission in life or your behavior or your traits or the particular things that you like and how you like them. It's more about your process. If you know yourself enough to know what you need, how to ask for what you need, or give yourself or provide yourself with what you need, then you're not going to be walking through life trying to get everybody to please you or to do what you need and blaming everybody for that, because you have been able to either provide it for yourself or get it from the person in a very assertive way. So the other person doesn't feel overwhelmed because you are asking for something that's very concrete and they know what to do. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing that has to be guessed or, you know, like, I should have known that you needed this. Nobody reads minds. Nobody can do that. So if you do your process and the other person is doing his process or her process, then we come together to a point, to a place where we're comfortable where we are at in our own lives. So we're just sharing, having fun and sharing the things that we like to do with each other. And how is that not going to be successful?
Well, it is. And I hear over and over again that one partner or the other partner isn't willing to do the work. And that's fine. And if you want to stay in the relationship, you have to decide if you're willing to do the work that you have control over and not constantly look at your partner as somebody that has to change. You look in the mirror, figure out what you need to change to be the best partner that you can be. And then you get to decide if the things that you're seeing in your relationship are healthy for you, the things that you're experiencing are healthy for you. There are going to be patterns. And I see this all the time. I saw it in my marriage. There were patterns. We would get in a conflict and the conflict wouldn't get resolved because neither one of us were hearing each other, because our nervous systems were dysregulated. Okay, that was a pattern that probably went on for 32 years. In order to break a pattern, you have to first recognize that it is a pattern and decide what you yourself, not what your partner is going to do, but what you yourself are going to do. And every relationship since my marriage, I have broken that pattern. I will not go around and around and around with communication or an argument or whatever. I'm going to step away. I'm going to pause. I'm going to come back when I'm more regulated, and I'm going to ask for what I need and I want. And if my partner can't give it to me, that's okay. That's information and data that I can use to decide if there's something I can do for myself to address that need, or if this is still the right relationship for me. I mean, we all get to make decisions.
Yeah.
Every day of our life, we get to choose based on what we're seeing, what the patterns are, what the way in which we're treated. Are we treated with respect? Are we given compassion? Are we given love? But are we giving that to our partners, right?
Yeah, right. I'll give you a simple example. And it's very funny because this is something that I know a lot of people can relate to. And it's how you put the toilet paper.
Uh-huh.
Some people put it on, you know, going on the top or coming out from the bottom.
Right.
And so this new relationship, he loves to put it coming out of the bottom. And it's like, I struggle doing that. In my head, it should come from the top.
I agree.
That is like the natural way. I can see the end. I don't have to look for it. I'm like, I don't need to have difficulties here. I need to just look at it and know what I'm doing. So at the beginning, you go like, oh, you put the toilet paper in the opposite way. What, like, how is your brain telling you to do that? And it's like, if we don't work out that little part, every time I go to the bathroom and I find the toilet paper on the opposite side, I'm going to go like, he knows how I like it. Why he's doing this to me? Like, is he really doing this to me? That would be the first question. He's not doing that to me. His brain is telling him that the toilet paper goes the other way. And then my brain is telling me this, the opposite. So now when we find the toilet paper, we don't take it personal. So we're just fine. Okay, this time she put it on, so it goes on the top. And the next time he puts it on, so it's going to go on the bottom. And nobody has a problem with that. So if you can't find that middle ground where you are okay with how his reasoning for doing something and then my reasoning to doing something, and we can respect each other on that and find that, okay, I mean, for one role, I can go the other way and then he can go the other way for one role. So that is a simple thing, like a very daily in your daily life. But I think we can extrapolate that to a lot of things in life.
I agree with you. And those simple things can become humongous things.
Problems,
right?
Yes.
So I always tell couples that it's really important to understand that you can both be right. And I think oftentimes one partner has tremendous difficulty with that. But the fact of the matter is the way you like the toilet paper is correct, and the way your boyfriend likes the toilet paper
it's
is correct
for him.
and you've created a happy medium. And if we could have that way of thinking about so many things in our relationships, there'd be more peace. Hopefully there'd be more love and compassion and respect. So we're at the end of the episode, and I think if there's any really important message that we want to get across to everybody, is that there is hope, right? There is hope for neurodiverse relationships. And not only is there hope, but there's opportunities for learning the ways to understand each other better. So any last thoughts, Olga, before we close out?
You know, I think we've covered a lot, and it's hard to think of one thing, but the main message here is love, respect, and be compassionate to yourself so that you can give it to the person that's right in front of you. If it's your partner, your children, your relatives, whoever it is that's in front of you, it is fun. It becomes something that's fun to watch the rest of the world and how different we are. And so let's enjoy the difference and make a better world in a loving world for everyone.
Amen. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.